WMFO in Medford. Sky By here. It's 8 o'clock. This show is going to be a bit about, it's a bit of a theme show, I guess you'd call it. We're going to talk a lot about a show coming up this Saturday at Once in Somerville, the Super Black Market Clash City Rockers, which is Dan Kopko and Tim McCoy and friends. I say friends because it's about a 5 or 6 piece group there. They have a horn section. I think Tony Kaczynski and Jen Dangora are going to jump in and do some work with that as well. But they're going to play London Calling front to back. And I saw it up in Portsmouth. They put on a hell of a show, top-notch crew. And I should also mention that I'm going to be giving away a couple tickets here, a pair of tickets. So if you want, the number is 855-915-9636. Once again, if you're a fan of The Clash, or if you're a fan of punk rock, who isn't a fan of The Clash, then it is a bit of a must-see. As I said, Dan Kopko, Tim McCoy, bunch of other people. And I'm going to be back with Steve Morse in about 10 minutes. But right now I'm going to play some Clash tunes. I'm going to stick a Springsteen song in there. And we'll be back in about, as I said, about 3 songs later. Once again, 855-915-9636. If you want tickets, now would be a good time to call because I'm going to be playing some music. Here we go. We'll be back in about 10 minutes.
in Candy's room. There are pictures of her heroes on the wall. To get to Candy's room, gotta walk the darkness of Candy's hall. Strangers from the city call my baby's number and they bring her toys. When I come knocking, she smiles pretty. She knows I wanna be Candy's boy. There's a sadness hidden in that pretty face, a sadness all her own, from which no man can keep Candy safe. We kiss, and my heart rushes through my brain, and the blood rushes in my veins. The fire rushes through the sky, and we go driving, driving deep into the night. I go driving deep into the light. Candy's eyes, she says, baby, if you wanna be wild,
WMFR in Medford. That was Coupled by the Clash. That was Brand New Cadillac. Stuck Candy's Room in there. And Death or Glory off of London Calling. And I'm here with Steve Morse. How you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and my pleasure. I told Steve off here, as I've been reading the Globe for a long time, going back when I was a youth. My parents, that's the paper we got. So I've been reading your reviews and articles for long. I was a fan of yours long before I started seeing you in these local clubs and whatnot. And so appreciate your work.
Yeah, well, I did it for 30 years at the Globe and, you know, 250 shows a year, roughly, sometimes up to 300 a year. So I'm lucky to have my ears
for close to
hearing
30?
At all.
Yeah.
I mean I've heard some loud music, and I've only used earplugs a few times. You know, Motorhead, the Ramones, the Who, you know, the real super loud bands.
Yeah.
Motorhead was the loudest ever, but the Clash, you know, I want to talk about that. I love the Clash.
Yeah, but you've seen and written and interviewed so many. We'll get into that a little more, though. It's like a who's who of music history. It really is. But yeah, you've seen the Clash a few times, or?
Well, I saw them their first show in the East Coast. It was at the Harvard Square Theater, which later became the Harvard Square Cinema, and it's now gone. But it was 1979. I can't believe it's just 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's why they're doing this. It's the 40-year anniversary of London Calling.
Yeah, okay.
And so that's why Dan and Tim and company are doing this once thing there where they're playing it, because it's the 40th year, 40 years out.
Yeah, well, they opened with I'm So Bored with the USA, and the crowd was even a little shocked. You know, they kind of, they expected a night of revolution and, you know, rebel rock, but they didn't expect to have that in your face right away, you know.
I like it, though,
screw America type stuff. But that's the way, you know, Joe Strummer particularly was, you know, the singer. He was the son of a British Foreign Service diplomat, but he told me, I interviewed him a few times, and he told me he heard Not Fade Away, you know, the Buddy Holly tune, done by the Stones, you know, the Stones doing it at when he was age 11. And he said after that, school did not exist.
Really?
Yeah, and he became a street singer, and you know, he was being chased away by the cops, and you know, sleeping out in the alleys, and you know, he really lived it. You know, he was not just some sort of a poseur.
Yeah,
I mean, Joe was, you know, real, and in his feelings about, you know, the underdog, and you know, screw the rich, and you know, the whole themes of the Clash.
Yeah. So did you have any idea where they... Well, they were just breaking on the scene then, so they... But they had quite a buzz, obviously, coming over here in 79.
They I saw them... Geez, I saw them in New Jersey, in Asbury Park, at Convention Hall. I saw them at Bonds in New York. It was a club that was oversold to the point where it was closed down a couple nights. The Clash would play a whole week there, and couple nights it was so crowded that, you know, they got closed down, and it was almost a riot, and you know, big trouble. Then I saw them, where else? Just all over the place. I was a Clash maniac, I guess you'd say. And you know, one thing about the Clash is, and somebody pointed this out, reminded me recently, is when they come on stage, they always ran on stage.
Yeah, other people have mentioned that to me.
You know, it was like a sprint.
Like
you know,
they were in a hurry to get their message out. They were,
you know, like getting into a Formula One racing car. You know, get ready, you know, keep up with us. And they were probably, you know, one of the highest energy bands I've ever seen, and really inspirational, and so many, you know, rebel anthems, and just such a good band. I mean, you know, especially when Topper, remember the drummer Topper? He later had a heroin problem and had to leave the band. You know, they had a rough life, those guys. And and Strummer, you know, was not easy to deal with. I mean, he and Mick Jones, the guitar player, had the falling out, and you know, they only lasted you know, a few years with Mick Jones in the band, and then they had a couple of substitutes. Remember, they came back, they played the Worcester Centrum with three new players, and you know, some of the original Clash fans were very upset. And there was later a documentary, The Rise and Fall of the Clash, that said that the substitute players, they complained they only got about $300 a week you know, from the Clash management. And that's not what the Clash was all about.
Yeah.
So it ended badly, you know, it's a stain on their legacy. But the first few years were just an adrenaline rush, you know, of the likes that I really have never seen. I mean, they were just, they played the Orpheum, you know, a few times. And and they took the seats out. Remember the front, first time I'd ever seen that. Don Law was furious, you know, the promoter. But the Clash said, we're not playing unless you get, you know, a general admission floor, you know, up front. You know, where people can mosh and whatever.
And that was relatively unheard of probably at the time, I would imagine.
Totally unheard of.
To do something like that.
Security hated it, you know, created a lot of problems for them.
Right.
And then there was a two-night run they did at one point. And the first night, you know, I guess there weren't enough seats taken out or whatever. So Joe, you know, they used to do I Fought the Law, right? I Fought the Law and the Law won. So they changed it to I Fought Don Law and Don Law won.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah. That's the kind of guys they were, you know. Yeah. They were, you know, their record label was CBS, right? And, you know, okay, that's, you know, doesn't have a lot of indie cred to do that. But
right.
A lot of them, you know, did, though the punk bands did go with the big labels. But the Sandinista, remember Sandinista? Mm-hmm. Was a three-album set. Mm-hmm. And the Clash wanted it released for the cost of one album, and CBS balked, and of course they got their way. But the Clash had a constant troubles with their record labels and with promoters. I mean, they were always in hot water.
Yeah. Did you see them after? You saw them after 79 as well, I'm sure.
Yeah. I saw, of course, the Orpheum. I think they played couple of different sets there. Bonds Club in 81 in Times Square. Convention Hall in Asbury Park, 82. And that was a crazy night. That's Joe Strummer had gone AWOL for a month. Remember, Joe just took off and they found him in Paris. The band, band even hired a detective to try to find him. And they couldn't find him, and he was hiding out, I guess, with his girlfriend or whatever. And I interviewed him after that show in New Jersey, and he said during the getaway, you know, the month-long getaway, he said he ran in the Paris Marathon, right? He ran three marathons without
legit
training, according to him, you know. And then he said he also counted rivets on the Eiffel Tower.
All right.
And he said there were 14,712.
You know, I won't doubt him, right?
That's I'm not up on my rivet trivia, but I'll believe him. and he considered retirement, but decided to return because of a belief in the band's radical politics. Quote, "If we don't sing these songs, ain't nobody else going to," Strummer said. "What else am I going to do, really?" So, yeah, he was committed, you know, to the max.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just loved the guy, really. It was so much fun to talk to him. He was you know, just so, you know, anti-corporate. Yeah. You know, they were ahead of their time, really.
Yeah.
You know, and they got kind of squashed.
You don't find that as much anymore.
Yeah.
Kind of spirit.
You don't find many record labels that powerful as CBS either.
Yeah.
So. Everybody's scrambling these days.
Right, right. There's been the demise of vinyl and records, and they don't even, I noticed, post used to like top-selling albums and releases. It's pretty much all stream now, and there aren't many physical sales going on anymore.
No.
Which I guess is why a lot of bands have to tour so much.
Yeah.
You got to make your money touring.
Yeah, yeah. Well, unfortunately, the baby boomer bands are charging $200 to $300 a ticket.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's up there. That's
their managers and agents are used to, you know, living in clover. Yeah. So,
but they get it for that. A lot of times. They get it. They get that kind of money, which is, I think, we talked about this a while ago. That we'll get to the local thing in the next segment. But locally, there's a ton of great talent. Ton of people playing these various clubs right here in Somerville, Cambridge area. You get $10-$15. And you can see some great talent.
Yeah. That's where I mostly go now. I mean,
I'm
not really comfortable at these shows at the amphitheaters. And, you know, there's more security than patrons. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
The old days, they used to be, remember the red shirts? the red shirts. That was a what they called peer group security. You know, it was it was not like this now. They have these, you know, more corporatized Aegis security. You know, they have different official uniforms and everything like that. But in those days, it was just you'd wear a red shirt.
Exactly.
It could be anything. Guys would just show up in raggedy tag red shirts.
Right.
And they were the security. And it was a lot looser.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these guys would, you know, tolerate. I mean, you know, there'd be some brawls with bands once in a while. Like a ZZ Top show. Some kid would be on Angel Dust running around. And, you know, the security would be challenged by that.
Right.
But you know, compared to now, you can't go this way, you can't go that way, and you go to House of Blues, and there's a little white line, you know, you got to stay behind when you're standing up.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, everything is so kind of rule-driven, and it's...
I have a funny story about the House of Blues. I'm gonna play a song. Maybe I'll get to this in the second segment, but I have a funny House of Blues story, but... I played two relatively, just played some London Calling stuff that were not, I guess you'd call like the one of the three or four hits off that tune, although the whole thing's great. But this is one that you will all recognize. It's got a lot of airplay, one of their big ones. We'll be back in about, I don't know, probably about 10 minutes. Talk some more. right. WMFO in Medford. That was Brad Marino, local guy. He was in a band called The Connection. That was his solo effort called Extra Credit. And before that, we played Clampdown, of course, by The Clash. Here with Steve Morse doing a Clash, more or less, show because we were pumping the show once in Somerville this Saturday night. Are you going to try to attend that thing, Steve?
I wish I could. I'm going to be out of town, unfortunately. I'm going to do a wedding. I don't get invited to too many weddings anymore. But
got to hit them when you can.
Got to hit this one, though. But, yeah, I would like to see it. I hope they do it again.
Yeah.
You did it up in New Hampshire, you said. It was a big hit.
Yeah, it was. And that's why, at the time, it was just going to be the one-time deal. They weren't going to do it. I think it was billed as a one-off. But, yeah, I think they got such a good response that they figured they'd try it down here. And I'm sure they'll get a big crowd. But among the other people that you have interviewed, you've interviewed, like I said earlier, pretty much anyone in rock history. And I myself am a huge Springsteen guy. I've seen him close to 60 times.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't fool around. I've seen him a lot. So, and you've talked to him a few times.
Does Homeland Security know about this?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think any over 50, you know, they write it down. You know, they know.
Yeah, I've seen all his incarnations, the Sega sessions, the Joe solo thing, the broken up band Tunnel of Love thing, the obviously E Street. So yeah, I've seen a ton of his shows. But you have as well. When was the first time? Do you remember the first time you talked to him? How early on it was?
Well, I didn't see him when he played Joe's Bar in Cambridge.
Yeah, that was back in like 73 or something.
Some really early events. And,
yeah. Not many people did at that.
Living in Rhode Island at the time, so I was not working at the Globe until 75 is when I started at the Globe. First time was at the Music Hall, which is now called the Wang Center.
Right.
And then I've seen him ever since, everywhere. Yeah. Had a couple great interviews with him. My favorite Springsteen story is Hartford, Connecticut in 1999, right? And, you know, Bruce does things late. You know, he stays up all night. He's super wired. So he keeps people like me waiting. You know, I'm coming in just trying to get some scraps of quotes and things like that. But this time... you know, and I had to drive back to Boston, an hour and a half drive, so I was trying to kind of hustle it up to see if I could see him, you know, sooner than later. And I go into the backstage, hallway at the Hartford Civic Center, and Bruce is out in the hallway talking to these Make-A-Wish kids, right? And it just melted my heart. I mean, I could not believe it. I mean, there were probably about 20, 25 kids, you know, many of them in wheelchairs, you know, in tough condition, you know, and their dream was to meet Bruce Springsteen. And, you know, I've occasionally seen things like that are more kind of meet and greet type stuff where, you know, the artist comes out and, you know, spends about 5 seconds saying, you know, good luck to you. Thank you for enjoying my music, you know, goodbye. But Bruce spent at least 5 to 10 minutes with each of those kids, and he really got into it. He said, tell me about your life. You know, I could kind of overhear it a little bit from the distance. And he kept me waiting, you know, it was an hour or so before, you know, an hour and a half before Bruce finished up.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of this inspiring to see an artist do that. Because those kids went away, you know, with the experience of a lifetime. So that's the kind of guy Bruce is when he's obviously got people knocking on his door from all over the world. So when he finally does see you, he gives you his undivided attention. And another time.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's... great, great heart. But another time I saw him at the... Providence Civic Center, or whatever it is, a Dunkin' Donuts.
That's the first time I saw him. I saw him in 1980. It was the first time I saw him, and it was there at Providence.
Yeah, it might have been right around the river, you know.
Yeah, it was a tour.
Yeah, okay. And Bruce, I was happy, just into a little bit of country music at the time, you know, discovering Hank Williams. Mm-hmm. And I brought up Hank Williams as an influence on the river. And Bruce went off for like a half an hour on how much he loved Hank Williams and the guys in the band. He was driving them crazy because on the tour bus, you know, he was playing Hank Williams the whole time.
Yeah, I've read that. This is Hank Williams' fondness,
Got into it, you know, down, what is it, down by the river or whatever, you know, some Hank Williams. He kind of took some lyrics from Hank, but... But you know, when he gets into something, it's 110%. Yeah. And
well, he went into after the river. He went into not after the river, but after he ended up going into Nebraska after.
Right.
So he did have a little bit of that country-ish thing.
Going on
in that.
And then Johnny Cash did a couple of those songs. You know, Highway Patrol.
Right.
Patrolman. I mean, Johnny Cash picked up on those and. So yeah, he had a lot of overlap with the you know the progressive country people.
Yeah.
But I also saw when he that 84 tour, the Born in the USA tour, I saw the first New York area show, which was at Saratoga, and Saratoga Springs, and he packed the place. It was like 35,000 people. Mm. I think they had to get a new curfew after Bruce, you know, left because it was just too much. You know.
Yeah. He's been known to go beyond the curfew, one of those deals.
Well what am I thinking of? Or an audience capacity.
Different,
yeah. You know, they had to lower the capacity. It was just too many people there, you know. But it was probably the best show I've ever seen Bruce do. And, you know, it was the first New York area show, and he was doing all the Glory Days and you know, all those tunes. And crowd was just erupting, and you know it was back in the days of, you know, a lot of ecstasy pills floating around the crowd.
Added to the enhancement of the
added to the enhancement.
Attitude.
And Nils Lofgren, remember his guitar player, had that trampoline. He had that little small trampoline. I don't think he does that anymore. He'd probably break his neck.
I think he's had double hip replacement.
His trampoline days are over. But he was doing, you know, backflips on the thing, and Bruce was darting up and down and speakers and jumping off. I mean, it was like watching gymnastics display.
Yeah.
But the energy level was off the charts. And
I think that's what helped draw his appeal was when you, it's the old adage that when you see him live, it's a whole different experience than maybe not so much now because the dude is almost 70. But back then, the live experience didn't do justice to the records. When you saw him live and you're like,
well, remember he did Fenway a few years ago, and he still did like a three-hour, 20-minute show.
Oh, yeah, the length is still crazy,
The guy's in terrific condition, and I don't know how he does it, really. But he's from that bop till you drop generation, you know, Muddy Waters
and he's
John Lee Hooker. Those guys all played, you know,
right
to the end. And Bruce, you know, I don't see Bruce retiring anytime.
No, so. I mean, and I think he's well. If you listen to him anyway, he has stayed away from the drug. I mean, he'll drink now and then, but I think he has stayed away pretty much from any drugs, and that's maybe helped his lifestyle a bit, I guess. But
yeah, he was a big drinker. I read his memoir.
Isn't that great? I read that. Yeah,
very good. And
dealt openly with his depression issues, which is good.
Yeah, that surprised me. He was so open talking about the depression issues. But when I finally saw him in Hartford back in 1999, you know, after the Make a Wish kids, I finally got back there, and Bruce, you know, brought out a bottle of Jack. So.
He does drink to calm down, and I
had my drive back to Boston, I had to proceed very slowly back there, but you know, Bruce was starting to get, you know, tuned up a little bit, but he's never had the kind of, you know, Keith Richards drinking
problem, or like I said, any drug addictions where you're gonna have to be way to rehabs or anything. He's avoided that anyway, that pitfall, I guess you'd call it.
He's apparently found Jesus. Like at the end of the memoir, he talks about God. Mm-hmm.
And very spiritual.
It's some things that I didn't expect to read about him. But you know, when he would tour, remember he'd always give money to like the local food banks.
Yeah,
and that, you know, I'm not talking like $1,000. He would give like $15,000 in every city. Yeah, to the local food bank.
Yeah, he always pushes the food banks at the shows.
And who does that? You know, I mean, Bruce is a really unique guy, and I know a lot of people are down on him. I don't know. There's an anti-Springsteen backlash that has kind of always been there. You know,
well, the politics don't help him. They help me because I'm in his camp.
Yeah.
But if you're not left leaning, the politics sometimes aggravate people.
Yeah, he did do a benefit for John Kerry.
Even, yeah, you know, which but, I say is fine with me. But
he doesn't push it in your face, though. It's more humanistic politics.
And it should be, if you follow his work, it shouldn't come as a shock.
Right, it's not like the Clash. The Clash, were, you know, just right in your face about that, and you know, that was back during the
Bruce
Reagan
era. Bruce is a little
era.
More subliminal, but if you listen enough, you know where he stands.
It
shouldn't come as a surprise that he leans to the left on his dealings.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But Bruce is just a terrific guy, and I find him to be one of the best lyricists. I mean, he's written how many thousands of songs has that guy written? I mean,
this is all like music to my ears because I like him a lot. To hear good things about him it's good. Are there any people that you?
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. I mean, you saw him 60 times.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a pretty big admission. What was the best one you saw of yourself? Is it anything stand out as number one, or is it too many to really just rank?
It's hard to rank. I would go back. The first time I saw him was, like I said, in 80 in Providence. Obviously, I just knew his music. I had his records. And the first time I saw him, I remember it was a little past midnight, and the lights were all up, and he was still going. I think they were doing the Quarter to Three song. I forget the exact song.
Yeah, Gary U.S. Bonds. Yep. Yeah, he would he'd always do those old R&B hits. And
I was just, I was like, I've never seen anything like this. This is it for me. And a few things, I didn't expect much out of the Seeger Sessions show. Because I'm thinking, damn, it's, you know, John Henry and all that. Pay my money down, whatever. But that was fantastic. I don't know if you saw that tour.
I did.
That was fantastic, I thought. Totally different, but...
Yeah, I did. There was a...
My friends and I refer to it as the Hootenanny shows, but no, I thought they were...
Right.
So that was more, not so much one of my favorite shows, but I was surprised how good I thought it was. Because I didn't know what to expect from it.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny because I found out from the inside that... Like some of that band, you know, he hadn't played with before, and there was a guy from Boston. I think he was a banjo player or fiddle player. He was a Boston guy.
I
knew, you know, a friend of his, and the friend was saying the Boston guy had to sign a confidentiality agreement.
Oh, really?
Right? And, you know, a lot of acts force you to Aerosmith. You think, you know... They hire somebody, you got to sign a confidentiality agreement to not talk about the band. And Bruce went one step further. He had a second confidentiality agreement that said that if someone asked you if you signed a confidentiality agreement, you'd say no.
Deny at all costs.
Isn't that unbelievable? Because he didn't want to be... Because that sounds a little constrictive. And, you know, Bruce is supposed to be this big open-minded liberal.
Yeah, no, he has his...
To put a double... You know, how funny is that, though?
That's funny. Good information that we would not have known if you were not here.
Well,
is there anyone that you, I mean, of all the acts, is there a highlight? Do you have a highlight or a guy or a girl or a band that, you've seen so many great ones. It's hard to probably pick a highlight.
I've been blessed, really. I mean, I started out, caught Led Zeppelin twice in England in 1969. You know, I caught... The Rolling Stones at the Hyde Park concert in 69, right after Brian Jones died in the swimming pool. And that's really what turned me on. I said, geez, I got to get into this as a career. And I wasn't good enough to play music. You know, I dabbled in it. But, you know, I don't have any box set coming out anytime soon. You know, but
if you do, I'll play it.
But I found I could write about it, and you know, one thing led to another, and I pushed on through.
So that was like the springboard. Those kind of shows that you said, wow.
Yeah. But you know, the best interview, Keith Richards is probably, he just shoots from the hip. You know, he just doesn't care about any public image. And once in New York, it was a 4 o'clock interview with Keith, He regularly shows up like an hour or two late. You know, Keith Richards is not going to be on time. Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah. You know. And he walks in with a bottle of Jack, a fifth of Jack, and two sodas, right? I go, oh, what's going on with this? And he sits down, and we talk. And I notice him kind of, you know, juggling the sodas and whatnot, but I'm paying attention to his words and looking him in the eye. And at the end of 45 minutes, he says, oh, excuse me, mate, I have to go to the bathroom. And he gets up and goes to the bathroom. And I happen to look over, two-thirds of the bottle of Jack Daniels is gone. And this is in the, like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I go, whoa, it's going to be a good day for Keith.
And he's still kicking. That's right.
Yeah, so he says he's cut back on the booze, though. You've probably read that, you know, that he said he got tired of it and all this stuff. But for years, but you know, people say, what was he like after two-thirds of a bottle of Jack?
Right. And I would think messy, but no.
Well, I said he slurred his words at the beginning and he slurred his words at the end. So there's no difference at all. But
you
just brilliant, brilliant stuff, you know, about the music and you know, just his love of the Stones. I mean, that guy just, you know, born to, you know, rock. And but I've been lucky. I interviewed Bob Marley. I mean, I've interviewed, you know, a lot of people that are, you know, of course, gone. Jerry Garcia 4 times. I mean, twice in person, twice on the phone. You know, I was at the Globe and a lot of times.
You still do some work now.
I do, yeah. I did interviewed Nick Mason of Pink Floyd. He just was at the Orpheum doing some Pink Floyd tunes and hoping to interview John Fogerty, who's coming to town later. He's one of my favorites, the old Creedence Clearwater Revival, you know, guy. And I teach at Berkeley. I teach the online course in rock history at Berkeley College of Music. Somehow they, you know, got me involved, and I wrote basically a book for them, and it's divided into 12 weeks. It's a three-month, you know, summer, fall, you know, spring, you know, terms, and it's the history of rock, and I got a lot of interviews. I, you know, did video interviews with quite a few people, and from George Clinton to Huey Lewis to, you know, Joe Perry. I kind of called in my chips a little bit.
You ran the gamut there. You bounced around from Clinton to Huey Lewis to
Ernie Isley, Susan Tedeschi, Amanda Palmer.
Some local flavor.
But, you know, Duke Levine, you know, Dave Maddox, who lives up in, you know, Gloucester, Marblehead area. Yeah. Hugo Burnham from Gang of Four. He lives up in North Shore, so I had him come in. And it's a fun course, you know, so I can do it out of my home. It's all on the computer. So I've got a, you know, really
keeps
lucky.
You busy.
I rode the wave, you know, I just hit it at the right time. So, you know,
well, you've done some fine work. I used to really enjoy reading your articles.
Well, I appreciate that.
But time's winding down here. Yeah, the hour, when I have a guest in, the hour goes quick.
It's
only an hour show. And if there's no one here, because I play a lot of punkier, quick tunes, so an hour's good. But when I have someone in, sometimes I say, geez, it's like, you know, 10 or 9. I get it. Then I'm thinking, well, that's when I wanted the 2-hour show. But we're down to 1. So,
well, I appreciate it. I mean, we're going to mention local bands, too, a little bit. You know, and Watts, it's one of my favorite.
Yeah. I wanted to Dan and Tim.
Plug in for those gentlemen.
Indeed.
And Fire King, you know, Anthony Kaczynski's band.
There's a ton of them. Ton of great bands.
Yeah, just so many.
And I give you credit. I see you out there, and I think a lot of people, a lot of even music DJ type or people in the industry, I don't know if they really go out to shows. And I see you a lot, and so I give you credit for that. I think it's good because, I mean, I try to get out. I mean, I work. I get up early, but I try to get out like a couple nights a week. I generally do.
Yeah, I see you around fairly frequently. And
we would say, and it's short money, you know? Instead of paying $150 or $100, whatever it is, to go to the Gillette or TD, or you can go down the street to clubs and see great towns like the bands you just mentioned and many more for like $15, $10, $15.
There's a great band at Toad tonight, the Blue Ribbons.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are dynamite. And I call them the band of Boston. Remember the band, Levon Helm and...
Yeah.
Rick Danko and all those guys, they could do any kind of music.
Last Waltz was my favorite.
And that's what the Blue Ribbons are like. They play every other Tuesday at Toad, and And Duke Levine is playing at the Lizard tonight. He's doing that super sweet sounds of the 70s. He's got a,
I like the Lizard.
Does 70s music, and there's just so much going on. And
there
great
is.
Tributes, you know, like Sally yeah. O'Brien's. Geez, I saw like an Elvis Costello tribute down there
yeah.
that was great. I love the tributes. There's a Motown tribute coming up
coming
at the Lizard
yeah.
that I'm going to hopefully go to. And
Nicole Tomorrow's involved in a lot of that. She's another
that's
local
right.
gal.
Yeah, yeah.
Who does a lot of that Sally O'Brien's tribute stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So I try to get into the local scene as much as I can, because I don't like going to the Garden as much. And you know,
no, I very rarely.
Treated like
remember.
A number. I'm not working there anymore. So, you know, I see what the general public goes through, and it's not always pleasant.
I haven't been to the Garden in a long time.
Yeah, well,
but
I saw
you
Tom
keep
Petty,
busy
you know,
right
it's
here.
A good show. I'll come out of the woodwork for it.
Right,
but I, you know, a lot it's of the shows part. There. I mean, I'm not hanging out at a Justin Timberlake show
no.
or anything like that.
No.
So I'm a rocker, you know, from start to finish.
Yeah, yeah, me as you know, me as well. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I started the Social D. I didn't talk to you, but I started the Social D show. You're with Nick actually.
Yeah,
that night.
Yeah, yeah. I love Social D. Yeah,
that was a good show. He's talk about a guy that doesn't deviate. You go to a Social D show 20 years ago, and they're probably playing the same material. But I love it. I love Social Distortion. But yeah, they don't. You're not going to get much deviation in that dude. The stuff he lays down, and
right,
it works.
Right.
So
well, it's kind of like punk rockabilly, and
yeah.
you know they do it well, and he's got the
yeah.
voice for it. And I'm amazed his voice is held up.
Yeah, because even
all the years.
Yeah, again, he's. He's just getting up there. All these guys and girls are getting up there, but they, yeah. And I think that's the only way they make money now is to tour, as we were saying.
Yeah.
No one's moving records.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of people are selling out the advertising, you know, jingles and or,
yeah.
or not jingles, but what are the, you know, even Zeppelin, you know, you
that's
a Mercedes
right.
Benz ad, and then
yeah.
you hear a Zeppelin, you know, they're. You make a
yeah.
lot of money through, you know,
yeah.
licensing their music for ads and of course soundtracks
yeah.
are huge and you know younger people video games
right.
you know that's a big source of like at Berkeley they have a whole major now you can get a degree in video and game design.
Oh,
video and
that's,
game design
that's
you know
that's trend.
Who
yeah,
never
that's
knew about that
that's
but yeah video games is they're just huge
yeah. All right, I gotta get a song or two in and do some.
I like your laid back style.
Sometimes too laid back, but yeah.
Oh no!
I gotta plug in some I gotta play a PSA about something or other, and But I want to thank you again for coming in. Well, do you see Little Stevens coming to the Medford, the Chevrolet Theater? Have you been to the Chevrolet?
Is he coming? There?
Yeah,
Chevalier.
Whatever it is. Yeah,
Chevrolet Theater.
Chevrolet.
Like that.
I don't know. The thing in Medford.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, but
he's coming there.
Yeah, yeah.
He's coming there.
Is he?
Yeah.
It's on a good show.
Yeah, I've seen him just once.
Springsteen's guitar player there, yeah.
Axe Slinger. All right, I gotta play a tune. But thanks again for coming in, Steve, and we'll see you in Clubland.
Thanks, Skybar. I've enjoyed it.
Indeed.
about? Where's Jimmy Jazz? I said, he was here, but he said he went out. He's there looking for Jimmy Jazz. Jazz, Jazz, Jazz. He's got the master gunner for Jimmy Dredd. Cut off his ears and chop off his head. Oh, you're looking for Jimmy Jazz, Jazz, Jazz. What a relief! I feel like a soldier, look like a thief. It's for the jazz. Lisa come looking for the Jimmy Jazz. He came in and went out. Cause now they're looking for that Jimmy Jazz, Jimmy Jazz. In fact, don't you bother me. Not anymore. I can't take this tale. Oh, no more. It's all around Jimmy Jazz, Jazz, Z, 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 J, A, Z, 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 J, A, Z, Z, J, A, Z, Z, J, A, Z, Jimmy Jazz. And then it sucks.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
All right, WMFO in Medford. I'm out trying to get through this thing quick. This is Mono and Stereo Band out of Illinois. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Highway 213 won't take us there, but it'll get us close. Where we're headed.